again with another installment of Adventures in Time, Space, and Music. In this segment, we'll be looking at the music of two very different composers, Radiophonic Workshop composer Brian Hodgson and 19th century Austrian composer Anton Bruckner. Here we'll examine the combination regarding Doctor Who serial UU, Story 45, The Mind Robber, a five-part story which originally aired between the 14th of September and the 12th of October 1968 on BBC One. On to the musical and sonic contributions by Radiophonic Workshop composer and special sound designer Brian Hodgson and 19th century composer Anton Bruckner. BBC Radiophonic Workshop special sound designer and composer Brian Hodgson was born in Liverpool in 1938. He is most widely known for his work with the Radiophonic Workshop, joining in 1962, where he became involved with the creation of special sound for shows including Doctor Who. Among his most well-known contributions to early Doctor Who include the trademark sound of the TARDIS dematerializing and rematerializing, a sound created by electronically treating the sound of running the key to his mother's house along a bass string of a piano. Additionally, Hodgson was closely involved in the treatment of actors' voices to create the iconic sound of the Daleks, distorting voices by feeding them through a ring modulator. During this period of early Doctor Who, Brian Hodgson collaborated with electronic music studio founder Peter Zinoviev and fellow Radiophonic Workshop musician Delia Derbyshire to set up Unit Delta Plus, an organization by which to promote electronic music. An interesting experiment in sound and light, the group exhibited their work at the Million Volt Light and Sound Rave at the Chalk Farm Road Roundhouse Theater, an event that saw the only public performance of the Beatles' Carnival of Light. In 1967, the Unit Delta Plus disbanded. Collaborating again with Delia Derbyshire and American-born musician David Vorhaus, Hodgson set up the Kaleidophon Studio in Camden Town. In addition to electronic music produced for various London venues, they produced three albums as the groundbreaking experimental band White Noise, filled with many of the musique concrète techniques they pioneered at the Radiophonic Workshop. Their debut album, the only with Hodgson and Derbyshire, was entitled An Electric Storm, now considered an important and influential album in the development of electronic music. Brian Hodgson was rather prolific during this period, as he often contributed, using pseudonyms, to the Standard Music Library. These recordings, as well as those produced under the name Nicky St. George, appear on 1970s programs by ITV to rival Doctor Who, including The Tomorrow People and Time Slip. Brian Hodgson was a well-known advocate within the BBC to promote the workshop with shows like Doctor Who, lobbying producer John Nathan Turner until the commission came for Series 18, when workshop composers such as Peter Howell, Paddy Kingsland, and Roger Limbs composed their first scores for the show. Between 1980 and 1986, and under the supervision of Hodgson, these composers wrote many scores for Doctor Who, including the scores by other Radiophonic Workshop composers such as Jonathan Gibbs, Elizabeth Parker, and Malcolm Clarke, whose first Doctor Who score was The Sea Devils in 1972, and whose final was the Doctor Who score to Terror of the Vervoids in 1986. In 1983, Brian Hodgson appeared at Doctor Who's 20th anniversary celebrations at Longleat, alongside many cast and crew members from the series. One other connection with Doctor Who, Hodgson's Electrophon collaborator John Lewis, was invited to compose the score to the 1985 Colin Baker serial, The Mark of the Rani. This was ill-fated, perhaps, as only the first episode was completed before Lewis succumbed to the AIDS epidemic, creating a great deal of drama within the workshop. This and many aspects of the history of the Radiophonic Workshop are chronicled in Dr. Lewis Niebuhr's, well, Dr. Lou's, Oxford University Press publication Special Sound on the history and legacy of the workshop, a highly recommended read exploring Doctor Who as well as the wide output of the Radiophonic Workshop across various media, including television and radio. As much of the 1970s, Doctor Who was synonymous with composer Dudley Simpson. The 1960s was a period of great variety and, as with the case in the Troughton era, The Mind Robber is a great example of the use of stock music in Doctor Who. Another surviving story, such as The Tomb of the Cybermen, illustrates this point very well, including Slavin's Space Adventures Parts 1 through 3, Scott's Palpitations, Sendell's Astronautics Theme Parts 1 through 7, Fleischer's Desert Storm, as well as Wilfred Joseph's Space-Time Music Parts 1 to 4. Now you might ask what all this has bearing to do on the Mind Robber. Well, much of the soundscape is created by Brian Hodgson. The central material appearing in The Mind Robber is the scherzo from Anton Bruckner's Symphony No. 7 in E major, often referred to as the Lyric Symphony, although it's not a designation from Bruckner himself. According to the BBC paperwork on the production of The Mind Robber, the recording used was a Deutsche Grammophon recording of Bruckner's 7th Symphony, catalog number LPM 18113. While this is believed by some to be a recording under the Berlin Philharmonic under the direction of Herbert von Karajan, the catalog number leads to a recording of Eugene Yoakum conducting the symphony. Both are significant interpreters of Bruckner's monolithic grand symphonies, so nonetheless, there's no evidence Karajan having recorded Bruckner 7 before The Mind Robber was produced. And Yoakum's recordings with Berlin, as well as his later recordings with the Staatskapelle of Dresden, were some of the earliest significant recording of Bruckner's symphonies in stereo. The use of Bruckner's scherzo is very small indeed, but appropriate in the story of The Mind Robber. As the master of the land in fiction and the doctor are pitted against each other, the fictional characters of the Musketeer d'Artagnan battle Cyrano de Bergerac, as Blackbeard battles Sir Lancelot. Interestingly, approximately 1.5 minutes appear in episode 5, 15 minutes into the episode. What is unusual, viewing the BBC paperwork, is that the production team licensed the recording for the entire 5-episode serial, while the music only actually appears in episode 5. Anton Bruckner was an Austrian composer born on the 4th of September 1824 and died on the 11th of October 1886, mostly known for his symphonies, masses, and motets. Bruckner's 7th Symphony was composed between 1881 and 1883 and was revised in 1885. It is dedicated to Ludwig II of Bavaria, often known to us as Mad King Ludwig, and was given its premiere by the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra at the Stadttheater under the baton of Arthur Nikisch in 1884. Like his other symphonies, this symphony survives in many versions due to the editing by many parties. The 1883 version was the version from the symphony's premiere, but only survives in one autographed copy, but is filled with changes by Bruckner and others, so there's no way to ascertain the original state of the symphony. Gutmann's 1885 published version contained the influence of Nikisch, Franz Schalk, and Ferdinand Lieu, with changes regarding tempi and orchestration. This is the version appearing in The Mind Robber. In 1944, Austrian musicologist Robert Haas published an edition of the symphony removing the use of cymbals, triangle, and timpani in the slow movement, using the 1883 autograph in an attempt to remove the influence of Nikisch, Schalk, and Lowe. The 1954 edition by Leopold Novak, another Austrian musicologist, retained many of the 1885 changes from the Gutmann edition, with many of the tempo indications added in an 1885 edition only to appear in the score in brackets. Another interesting version of Bruckner's 7th Symphony is the 1921 by students and associates of composer Arnold Schoenberg for the Viennese Society for Private Musical Performances. This arrangement was for 2 violins, viola, cello, bass, clarinet, horn, piano, 4 hands, and harmonium. The society went bankrupt before a performance of this was given, and this version was not premiered until more than 60 years after the fact.
Welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 315. I'm Adam, and I've forgotten the quote I was going to do now. Something to do with... No, I've forgotten. Carry on, Debbie Melrose.
This resolution may appear to be very bold and dangerous.
Mary Lang.
After some considering, I was of the opinion that this was altogether impossible.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
This is what you want?
Oh, I've got a quote. Jamie, the doctor! Ah! Ah! Ah!
Pretty much Zoe almost all the way through.
What's going?
Ah! Boy, she screams a lot.
Yeah, she screamed more than Doria did, but with a bit more resonance.
Yeah. Right, so yes, this week we're going to be looking at the Mind Robber. And
We are really? Because Andy thought we were doing something completely.
Let's hope Andy didn't.
He's always watching the wrong ones.
Well, let's hope Andy didn't take any notice of the next week caption at the end of the of episode 5, which is incorrect. All right. The story begins with obviously.
Well, it was correct, Master. It was correct, but they had to wait 3 weeks because of the Mexico City Olympics.
Yeah. What did I just say?
So the next story is the invasion.
Yeah, I know.
But.
Oh, give up. Right.
Right.
He always manages to turn things around to try and make out that he's right when he's not. All I said was the caption was incorrect.
Why was it incorrect? Tell me.
You just explained why, because it said next week.
Okay.
Oh, never
well,
mind.
We're watching
Debbie,
it next week.
Yeah, Debbie, tell him off.
We're watching it next week, therefore it's correct.
Look, if we keep doing this, Isla's going to interrupt with something inane about Play-Doh, so yeah, we're going to have to...
Right, the story begins with them sort of getting trapped in a volcanic eruption. The TARDIS struggles for some reason to get away from the lava. The doctor worries about things burning out on the console, and the only way he can get the TARDIS away from the offending area is by taking it out of reality. And
that seems a bit
really
to me.
I beg your pardon, Debbie.
It was a bit far-fetched, even for Doctor Who. That was
really. I don't think so. What do you think, Kirby? Do you think it's far-fetched for Doctor Who?
No.
No, definitely not. It's suddenly gone a lot more down the far-fetched route than it did in this story.
It's the entire story is fictional, so why would it be far-fetched?
Yeah, all right. there's a very fortunate part of the story in which Zoe gets changed into a cat suit, which I'm very pleased about.
For that famous shot.
Yeah.
Yes.
So episode 1 is basically them being tempted to go out. Oh.
Master. At Conca Cerberus, there was actually someone cosplaying in Zoe's cat suit. First time I've seen that as cosplay.
Did their butt fill the cat suit as well as Zoe's?
There was no demonstration of that.
No.
What's the whole point of it?
Prostrate herself on a console, did she? Or anything?
But she did get her picture taken with Fraser, so and he thought it was great.
Anyway, so Zoe is very naughty, and the doctor says not to leave, but she's very naughty and leaves. And then she has a little walk around the Blue Peter studio for a bit, and Jamie joins her. Because Jamie's seen,
why
obviously...
Why would you say it's the Blue Peter Studio?
Because it clearly is the Blue Peter Studio. Isn't it the Blue Peter Studio, no, Debbie?
It looked like the Blue Peter Studio to me.
Yeah, they just forgot to put all the little shelves up and little sofas.
Blue Peter had a standard studio that they used that was always set up. Whereas they mainly used BBC Television Centre Studio 3 and Lime Grove Studio D.
Ina, sorry.
Anyway, the Blue Peter Studio. Right, so moving on. The Doctor, meanwhile, is sort of trying to close his mind to all the temptations that are going on. Jamie and Zoe keep seeing their homes. Interesting to note that Zoe's city hasn't actually got a name. It's just called The City.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the Doctor...
It's
sorry?
I said it's logical to just call it The City.
I suppose so. I love the white TARDIS. That was quite interesting.
Yes, I like that.
Yeah. Was that specially made, Kirby?
When they finished with it, why couldn't they have repainted the regular TARDIS? Because it was still all messed up and stuff. afterwards.
This has got to be a different prop to the normal TARDIS that we see, this white
TARDIS. Now, I agree. And oddly, Infotext was acting as if it was the same prop, and they quickly painted it white, and then they scrubbed all the white off,
you can see it's not
obviously not.
No, it's not the same prop. So the Doctor goes out and gets Jamie and Zoe to come back into the TARDIS. Jamie has some funny dreams. And then the Doctor keeps battling against these noises. There's a strange sort of noise that gets into their head. And then the TARDIS explodes. And the console is just flying around with Jamie and Zoe attached to it. The Doctor then, turning around in circles, scares Zoe half out of her wits for some reason. I do not know why, but I'm very pleased that she was on the console for that particular scene. Very short episode, that. So episode.
They were all quite short, weren't they?
Yeah, they're all quite short. In fact, the last episode is the shortest one ever. Mm. So, 18 minutes.
And then suddenly they're in this strange forest of trees, and Jamie gets turned into a cardboard cutout. I did read. I was watching a bit of info.
As do we all.
Yeah, when we all get chicken pox, we all turn into a cardboard cutout.
Didn't you?
Yeah.
I felt like one.
I want to point out that they were very lucky that this, I think we might have spoken about this before, but this story was the one that they were making when he phoned in sick, because it did lend itself quite well to the story, this idea of changing the actor.
So it worked so really well. Bonkers, you know, anything is possible. So yeah,
they never would have. I can't even think of another story they could have actually done that in. But the scene in which Jamie, just before he turns into a cardboard cutout, was shot a couple of weeks later and just dropped in.
Three weeks later.
Yeah, so it's just as well, again, that this was the last one in the series, so they had time to do that. And then we see this mysterious sort of skull-capped character who talks in a weird, one minute in a sort of sinister voice, and the next minute in a much less sinister voice.
Did you notice that from the back, the little cables coming out of his skull cap look like devil horns? That was deliberate.
Yeah, I did hear this. I read about that. The Doctor, meanwhile, it can hear Jamie and Zoe calling.
Jamie!
And it gets across because
Doctor.
They're both calling at the same time. We have these sort of tin soldier things wandering around with their sort of lights on their helmets for some reason. That's all about. And then Gulliver
and the weird
turns
children.
Up. Bernard Horsfall turns up as Gulliver and, of course, plays the character brilliantly for this story. Very entertaining character, that is.
It's nice that they don't identify him as Gulliver right off. He's just the stranger.
No. But obviously, having seen it, we know it's Gulliver.
And also, what was the author's name? Peter Ling. Mm. He started out with a very strict rule that Gulliver would say nothing that except something he said in the book.
Yeah, but that changed
and
in episode five.
By the fifth episode, he'd thrown that out the window.
Yeah. Never mind. Anyway, then a group of annoying children turn up, and how did he get rid of them? I can't remember now.
After he solved the riddle of words sword to words, or words to sword.
Episode two is basically about the Doctor solving riddles, and then he comes across this cardboard cutout of Jamie, which he gets a Jamie is alive and well riddle.
I like that.
I wish I believed in wishing well.
Yeah. And then his face disappears.
That was one of my quotes, except I couldn't resist the carcass.
Yeah, then his face disappears, and Doctor has to put the face back together. Of course, he gets it wrong, and hence we're able to have Hamish Wilson. But there was three faces that they'd mixed up on that board. One of them, I think, was David Maloney, if I read that correctly. No, maybe it wasn't.
Yes, it was. You are correct, yes. As usual.
Exactly. So the new Jamie with a different Scottish accent turns up, and then they find Zoe in a jar because they went through the door in a jar riddle.
A door is a jar, yes.
Yeah, when is a door not a door? When it's a jar.
And then Jamie climbs up.
Jamie
climbs up one of the trees. And finds that they're actually in a forest of letters. Then Gulliver turns back up again, and they have another inane conversation with him. Oh, yes, they hide from the soldiers, but Gulliver can't see them, and he gives them away. So at this point...
I like that, because obviously he's a fictional character in his own fiction, and they're real characters. Yeah, it's I love the use of that. I thought that was brilliant.
And then they get charged by a unicorn. Apparently, I was reading the info text about that unicorn. Apparently, when they shot the original thing, they did it perfectly, but forgot to film it, or forgot to put film in the camera. So,
I didn't see anything like that in the info text.
Well, you should read the info text thoroughly, then, shouldn't you? Shouldn't he read the info
text? I was reading the info text. I read the info text twice.
Debbie, shouldn't he read the info text more thoroughly?
Yes, more thoroughly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they get away with that one because they basically said unicorns don't exist, etc., etc., and the unicorn then becomes cardboard cutout.
Isla. Oh, Isla boshed herself.
Oh, that's a bit, yeah. Bit of ointment, mummy.
Like I said, they filmed in... When they were at Television Center, they were filming from Studio 3, Blue Peter was always from Studio 1 until 1989, in which case they switched to Studio 2.
They all look the same.
Thank you, Kirby. So.
Yes, I have been researching that since we brought it up. About 5 minutes ago?
Yeah, never mind. Mm-hmm. So then another red coat shows up and Jamie gets aggressive towards it and his face disappears. Cobble cut out, face disappears, and Fraser Hines reappears as Jamie.
Yay!
And shouting at the red coat.
Of chicken pox.
There's some very good bits of direction actually in this thing. The camera is focused in on a spider's web, and then the focus goes through the spider web as the people enter the hut. I quite like little bits of detailed direction like that in the production.
Yeah, well directed.
There's a bit of twine, so they end up in a labyrinth, which is implied that they are heading towards the Nymon. Sorry, the
Nymon.
The Minotaur.
Nymon.
I do like the fact that Zoe's being very methodical in counting all the turns they've made.
Yeah.
That she's talking to the doctor about it. Jamie tries to interrupt with something about the twine's run out, and he goes, "Shush, Jamie!"
When you see how big that thing of twine is when they start, they really traveled.
Yes, indeed.
How big was it?
That's what she said. Right, so Zoe gets rather scared by the shadow of the Nymon. I mean, the Minotaur. and then Jamie, who sort of waited back a little bit because
Debbie, have you seen the Horns of Nymon?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
Jamie waited back a bit because
just wait.
Shut up. Jamie waited back a bit because the plot decreed so he could go off and meet Rapunzel.
Gulliver,
eh?
Are you a prince?
Yes, I am, but unfortunately, I'm taken. And then
which is odd because she's not a princess in the original story. She's
He's not. She's not a princess. No, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, right. So Jamie goes out and has to climb this rock face while being chased by his cousin in a soldier's outfit.
Those rocks are in East Sussex, so you could get in the car and drive over there and visit them because they're you can visit them quite easily.
I must remember to do that.
Bowles Outdoor Centre.
Ooh, mustn't forget that one. Hey, Debbie.
No.
So anyway, he climbs up.
I don't understand. I don't understand why you don't drive off to some of these locations all the time.
Because it costs a fortune to get off the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, if we could get off the island for cheaper, I'd be off it every weekend. Mm. But no, unfortunately, I get off maybe twice a year.
So
Doctor Who locations.net even wants people to send in pictures.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, Jamie's able to climb
it's
up the cliff.
Close to
Shut
the
up! Jamie's able to climb up the rock face because what appears to be a rope is thrown down for him, but it is in fact Rapunzel's hair. Yes?
The soldier at this point who's scraping his rifle, his bayonet against the rocks, that's Fraser's brother.
It's his cousin, not his brother. I said that earlier. Debbie?
Yeah?
Can you tell him off?
Yeah. Let him finish his sentence.
Well, if he's going to come out and interrupt me, better interrupt me with the facts, not the fiction. I know this is a fiction-based Doctor Who story. You're letting all the cold air in, which is a good thing on a hot day such as this. But I don't want any noises coming in from the other room. Doxum coming, what noises? Anyway, so...
The information I have says he's his brother.
Well, it's not. It's his cousin. Debbie!
Cousin. It's his cousin.
Thank you, Mary. I'm going to stop the deducting points if you get your facts wrong in a minute, Kirby.
I heard it was his cousin.
Thank you. You're outvoted. Pardon?
What do you want?
What do I want?
Yeah, what's that?
Well, I didn't...
Is that a problem?
No, there isn't a problem. Why have you come in?
You just called for me.
Is your name Debbie?
I thought you called for me.
I didn't.
Typical.
Anyway.
What's that typical? We can find it and prove it.
So Jamie arrives in this what looks like high-tech lab with all sorts of things going on. There was something about this lab I found quite interesting, actually. Oh, the audio book. I didn't know if there were any audio books in the 1960s. No, okay.
And also the storage for holding individual books. I mean, those things were the size of cabinets.
Yeah, I know. Well, they were cabinets. Anyway, so so this ticker tape thing is printing out what's actually happening.
I found another source saying that Ian Hines is the brother of Fraser Hines.
Yeah, well, the thing that I read said it was his cousin.
Thank you, Mary.
And I believe that he said in the commentary that it was his brother as well.
Ooh. So, anyway, moving on.
If you wish to continue to believe that it's his cousin,
well, I'm only going right by ahead, what your incredibly accurate info text says, Kirby. As you keep on quoting info text things, he's gone all quiet now. Right, so Medusa turns up, very elaborate stop-motion
Medusa. Good stop-motion on those snakes.
Yeah.
Well, for the budget they had, that was excellent.
Yeah, I agree. Reasonably scary, although the costume underneath the head was a bit... The one that was stop-motion was quite scary, and then when you see the one that was stood still...
Stop-motion was amazing.
Looked like a cricket glove draped over something, actually. Yeah, that was quite a good scene, that. Really, really well acted and well performed, the Medusa temptation. And that went on again for the beginning of episode 4.
I like the fact Jamie's watching all this via ticker tape.
Yeah. And then these hands come over and grab Zoe's chin. It's quite scary.
Yeah, 1 minute the hands are all over her face, and then the next shot they're nowhere near her, so I don't know.
Yeah, I've just noticed, actually, through this fast-forwarding a little bit, where while Jamie's reading out the ticker tape, the picture's a bit wavy. Never noticed that before. So the Doctor, I believe, chops off Medusa's head, but you don't see that scene.
No, he does not.
Why has he got a sword, then?
He was supposed to,
but if he had done that, he would have become fiction.
Ah.
Therefore, he uses the mirror instead.
Ah, which is in the fiction anyway.
You weren't...
That was in the myth anyway, was it not? Mary?
He brought the mirror with him.
Yeah, but wasn't the mirror bit in the original...
Yes, the mirror bit
Yes,
is,
it was.
Yeah, it is the mirror bit. Yeah.
But he used that, and then he chopped off the head with the use of the mirror.
Except, Mazda, yes. The mirror in the story is not a mirror, it is a sword.
It's a shield.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. I remember that bit. Anyway, moving on.
I think I'd watch that again. Clash of the Titans.
Shut up! Yes. The white robots turn up this time, and Jamie hides, but this time Gulliver doesn't.
Actually, mostly pale yellow and...
Yeah, all right! Gray. It's a black and white production!
Yes, they had painted them these colors so they wouldn't... So there would be no lens flare on the camera.
Excellent.
So they would look white.
This time, Gulliver doesn't give Jamie away. The Doctor and Zoe bump into the carcass. And there's a very amusing little fighting scene.
Carcass, yeah. Yeah, what a strange name for a hero.
Yeah.
Carcass, K-A-R.
Don't you remember when the Carcass comic strip was so popular 16 years ago?
Yeah, anyway, it should have been. Somebody should have actually bought it out, shouldn't they? Some Doctor Who fan should have actually bought it out. But apparently the costume and the design of the Carcass is supposed to be based on Batman. So that's quite interesting.
But, yes. Oh, someone was reading the info text.
Yeah, Zoe beat the Carcass very easily. And then because she was so excited about it, forgot most of her lines for the next scene. Yeah, meanwhile, Jamie is still in the... Oh, and then the Doctor and Zoe turn up in the sort of laboratory sort of place. Jamie gets his jacket back, which because Zoe's been wearing that for a little bit. And,
yes, they thought of that earlier because they had not written into the script a way for him to get his jacket back.
Yeah, the actors themselves thought of that. Very clever.
Yes, and then, during rehearsal.
Yeah, and then they walk into the main hub of the story, which is the Master and the strange brainy thing behind him. And the Doctor finds out, I think, at this point that they want him to take over from the Master. The Doctor's not too keen on that plan. And
do you suppose this particular Master may be the Doctor's brother? If the other one isn't.
No, it's not. Jamie and Zoe end up being slammed into the pages of a book, which I think probably would have squished them, but...
It turns them into fiction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the way, now we know where Captain Jack Harkness comes from.
Yes.
Captain Jack Hardaway.
Yes. So, episode 5.
Obviously, when was this DVD made? This must have been made before the new show came on, because they don't make that kind of, they don't bring up the possibility that that's where the name came from.
Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Anyway,
yeah, maybe it didn't.
During episode 4, the Doctor is trying to avoid being turned into fiction by
Yes, I was correct. The DVD didn't come out until March of 2005, which was right around when the show was coming back.
There you go.
And maybe it had nothing to do with his name, too.
Hmm. Excuse me?
And maybe it had nothing to do with his name.
Of course not, but I can still make the connection.
Anyway,
it's 5:25 in the morning. I could be more
pedantic.
Yes. Anyway, like I said, they're trying to tempt the Doctor into becoming or talking himself into being fiction, and then he gets trapped inside a fake TARDIS because he does fall for the Jamie and Zoe, who aren't actually there, scenario, and then he gets.
Yes, he completely falls for that, doesn't he?
He does. Gullible. Gulliver's troublesome.
No, Gulliver.
Yeah. So he ends up with this sort of crash helmet thing on his head, and he tries to use his mind to outwit the Master. And basically they're concocting the story as they go and trying to outdo each other by creating a more sort of potent villain to do the battles with. And... it's quite funny and absurd when Serrano de Bergerac comes along and they have a little sword fight, and then
that was interesting. I noticed, because here we tend to say Cyrano.
Whatever. Yeah, we do. When they said Serrano,
haven't we already Serrano. Established in the 7 years or so since we started doing this podcast that the Americans don't know how to speak properly? Like
Serrano.
We just illustrated this earlier on. I didn't actually pick it up at the time because I was feeling kinder. The ability to say the word mirror seems to be a bit of a problem with Americans. What do you think of that then, Debbie?
Mirror.
Mirror. It's a mirror. Is it, Debbie, what mirror. Is it? That thing you look into to confirm that you're pretty. What's it called, Deb?
Mirror.
Thank you very much. That is the correct pronunciation.
Well, I mean, you Brits always have trouble with R's anyway.
I have quite a lot of trouble with R's since I had a really bad brace fitted.
You have trouble with your R's?
It's very difficult to form the letter R.
Do you have trouble with your R's?
Sort of come Debbie. Out a little bit wheelie like that sometimes.
Debbie, do you have trouble with your R's? Never mind.
Fell right into that one. Splashing around in that one.
So yeah, subsequently, after a little bit of a battle, the robots having this rather sinister laser thing that comes out of their chests, a big battle comes off. The Doctor, Jamie and Zoe rescue the Master, who forgets where he was and just reverts back to his original. Oh, I'm just going for my interview at the magazine. And then the TARDIS comes back together, and that's the end of the episode, rather bizarrely. It makes it look like we've got a new companion.
It does, doesn't it? But, you know, they do cover the fact that he'll go back to his reality, they'll go back to theirs.
There we go.
I think that the story didn't occur at all.
Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But we got to see it, didn't we, Debbie?
I thought we did.
I thought we did, too. So, I'll tell you what I think of this one. It's really good fun. It's obviously quite plain they didn't need to have it as five episodes, where most of the episodes were less than 20 minutes long. They could have actually easily edited down to four. But it was experimental. I think for me, an experimental thing that works quite well. I think it was definitely aimed at the kids. I don't think they, at this stage of Doctor Who, there was a lot of stories that were specifically aimed at kids anymore until this one came along. And
actually, a lot of people said that kids would not understand it because of all the references were a little bit old.
Yeah, maybe so, but I think this was aimed at kids, and I thought it was really good fun. I tried to get Isabella to watch it this morning, but she's not feeling very well, so she became a bit uncooperative. So yeah, I quite like this one. I think it's one that's grown on me over the years. I don't remember being particularly enthralled in it when I first watched it several years ago, but I think it's quite an enjoyable episode. I was quite surprised to see that it was actually recorded in the previous series recording block, so it wasn't actually recorded as part of Pat Troughton's final series. So that was quite interesting. So, yeah, good fun, I think I'm going to sum it up with the same. Andy, what did you think? I wanted to ask all the Americans why
they
watch.
Before you move on to the next person, I looked up Ian Hines.
Yeah.
In the TARDIS Wikia.
Yeah.
And you know, it pains me a great deal to say that
it's his brother.
He's his brother.
That he is his brother.
Right. Well, yeah. I apologise, Kirby, for the fact that you were right. It is very irritating, but you do rather rely on the infotext being spot on.
Yeah, well, and the source that I usually do the research on also called it the cousin. So, TARDIS Wikia says it's his brother.
It is his brother.
What, you believe everything on TARDIS Wikia?
Sure. You're right, Kirby. You're right.
I know. I'm just being
facetious. Right then. So the next one, we're going to look at Debbie's, because this is the first time Debbie's seen this story. What did you think?
First time I've seen it, and I bore in mind what Mary said about looking at this one for the humour last week, obviously having really crashed through the last story too quickly. So I spaced this out and I really enjoyed it. Absolutely loved this one. I thought it was very funny, very clever with using Gulliver's lines and the words that are in his story. And I just thought it was a really nice little segue off from the usual peril of base under siege type thing that we've been having for a while. And I found that I really, really enjoyed this so much, and that I'd watched them all before I'd realised it because I was so into it, and just picking up the literary references and I've got a thing for riddles because Isla loves them as well, and just I couldn't really fault this as a brilliant step away from the way we've been going for a long time, and I thought Patrick Troughton was brilliant in this, trying to stay one step ahead of the Master. I thought the Master was a very cool idea using, and then right at the end bringing out all the literary heroes to try and defeat each other was brilliant as well. I absolutely enjoyed this one.
Thank you.
Several of those characters at the end were real people, like right. Blackbeard.
Yeah, okay,
but they also have stories written about them. Yes. So that
fictional stories about real people.
I wasn't going to complain about that. I was a bit distracted by Serrano's nose.
Serrano.
Well, we've had real people in Doctor Who anyway. Winston Churchill, for one.
Yes, but these were supposed to be fictional.
Okay, if you say so. Fictional versions of real characters. I think that's
okay.
That
that's better.
Ooh, there we go. I win that one. Mary, yes, what did? No. Save the best to last. Kirby, what did you think?
Ever since I first saw this one, several years ago. Didn't we cover this one?
I can't remember. I did look to see it. I didn't look far enough, obviously, but I was looking to see if I'd already done some questions. So I couldn't find any.
I think that we did discuss this one, but it was before we had the quiz.
Oh, maybe so.
Because I couldn't find any notes on it in my email. Okay. But I've always thought this one was a great deal of fun. I love the literary references. I love things like climbing up on top of the trees to notice that they're letters. Even as recently as a few weeks ago when we were at Concus Cerberus, Fraser always talks about the whole chicken pox thing.
It was a cunning way of doing it, wasn't it? It was a very good way of doing it. One of the shortest lived companions, yeah.
Oh, they even have him, I forget the actor's name, they even have him in the making of, or he discusses how he enjoyed coming in. He's scared because they basically hired him and he was on filming the next day. I can't really get into much more of what we've already discussed. I mean, it's just a great deal of fun. Yeah. Love this one.
Well done.
This is one of the stories that I'll pull out and watch just when I feel like a bit of second doctor.
Thank you, Kirby. Right, everybody, prepare yourselves. It's Mary.
Well, I guess I'm going to disappoint you again because I really, really enjoyed this one.
Oh, my God! Hey!
Well, I know we covered it once before, but, you know, past episode 2, I didn't really remember much about it other than I thought it was, you know, bonkers then. And you know, once again, it is. It's bonkers. But I think I just was looking at it entirely differently. And again, because we're doing this in progression, you know, so the rut that Doctor Who was kind of falling into at this point, this, like, took us completely out of that rut through so many unusual and mind-blowing things at us that it's kind of like, ooh. The
heart is blowing.
Again, yeah. And to find out that episode 1, you know, which you probably all know, was pretty much, you know, like written real quick to fill in a gap because the Dominators finished so early. But it's brilliant. It's brilliant what they came up with for episode 1. I think it was a great transition piece because to go right from the Dominators into the Forest of Words would have been, I don't know, a little too abrupt, but I thought this transition gave us that idea that something very unusual was ahead. And I also read about the fact that, not Fraser Hines, Frederick Troughton was getting so frustrated with the scripts. He thought that the scripts were getting just so routine and predictable, and he didn't feel like much was being asked of him. That he was actually considering leaving Doctor Who at this point. But this script and the filming, and because they were able to kind of make a lot of things up that were accepted and written into the script and all that, he felt like this one was so creative that this story convinced him to stay.
Oh.
And I can see why, yeah. So I'm glad of that. Let me think if there was anything. I found it strange that the pictures on the scanner were like nice memories for Fraser and for Zoe, because the last time attractive pictures were put on the scanner was because they were like in danger and it was like coaxing them to move on.
Yeah.
So I guess the TARDIS can just do what it wants when it wants to.
Yeah.
I also noticed that the Doctor's hair is a little shorter. He's had a haircut since the last story. And Zoe's hair was considerably longer than the last story. So you
guess
that this was taped several months later.
Well, you can see her hair change length between episode 1 and episode 2. Because according to the info text, they put a partial wig on her.
They do anyway. She wears a partial wig in her earlier episodes anyway, because she's got short hair. She's just got that fringe. So, but this is a different wig. and she's warm.
As Patrick Troughton found it to be, I too found it very creative, very different. Every episode, you know, had me just totally caught up in, whoa, what are they going to throw at us next, which I really loved. So
it was good, wasn't it? It was good.
It was
for that.
Really good, yeah.
Not being able to predict which way it was going to turn, because you've got so much, you've got unlimited resources with the literary characters, so
yeah. I just thought that the Carcass Head was a strange name.
That was the Carcass.
I love the Carcass.
I wrote it as Carcass until that she spelled it out for ages. I was like, what?
Yeah, I'm thinking Carcass. You know, when they were in that cave and the doctor says, oh, you know, and someone's been here recently, and they look down and there's like naked bones. I'm thinking, well, bones wouldn't indicate somebody was there recently.
No.
Yeah, that's not recent, no.
It's not a bit recent at all.
Unless Sebastian Arada had been in there, of course. Oh, sorry.
Yes, I was about to say that.
Sorry, Debbie.
That's all right. She's in the other room. She's not listening.
That's
turned out the lights.
Yeah. Well, you missed it either, don't worry.
think about it this way. Who turned on the lights? The Master.
Anyway, so yes, on the whole, we quite like this particular episode. Let's move on to some feedback. And we always enjoy the moment of feedback when Debbie realizes she's had a message.
Why are we going through this so very quickly?
Be quiet. That contains some text from
this.
Shut up. From Alan T. Butcher. Shut up, Magic.
Alan T. Butcher sent a long one. Okay, I do apologise if I don't get any words right, yada, yada, yada. I love his feedback. Don't ever get me wrong. I think he's wonderful, but I do think I can't read very well at the moment for some reason. Have our minds been robbed? Dear 20 Megabyters, the mind robber is, of course, a closely studied postmodernist narrative questioning the nature of reality and brilliantly employing the TARDIS crew to counterpoint the surrealism of the underlying metaphor. I like that. The juxtaposition of our regular characters as real compared to their context is the fundamental basis of this story. In the early part of the story, our heroes are clinging to their reality whilst being drawn into the fictional world via the intervening void. Once in the land of fiction, they are immediately placed in the archetypal metaphor for being lost or out of the normal, the woods. That these trees are in fact letters, whilst problematic in the rendering, remains a worthwhile and powerful representation of their predicament. Their various encounters establish our hero's reality and postulate the significance of suspension of disbelief in relating to fiction by demonstrating the individual's capacity to exercise judgment over the reality of anything they encounter in a literary context.
You think he deliberately minimises his punctuation just to wind you up?
I think so. Mm. And if you can hear what sounds like farting, it's Isla squeezing paint in the other room.
Oh, okay.
Riddles are, of course, a very prominent feature of the early Anglo-Saxon literary corpus, and it is gratifying to see them included here. The Doctor does get drawn in almost to the point of rendering himself fictional. It is interesting to reflect that by willing him not to fall into that trap, we are ourselves falling into the very same trap. The Doctor is, in fact, fictional, so by accepting his
reality... No, he's not.
He's real! Not wanting him to give it up, we do ourselves equate his reality with ours and thus render ourselves fictional. So very clearly, the Doctor does, as I have claimed above, counterpoint the surrealism of the underlying metaphor. We should take a moment...
You realise that he's quoting Douglas Adams there.
I know, I do, yes. That's why I was laughing at the beginning. We should take a moment to contemplate the very apex of this story and the Doctor's beautifully constructed and beautifully played statement. I believed in wishing wells. A proposition we should all consider in light of the remarkable story. We also learn that Chancellor Goth was working undercover in the land of fiction posing as Lemuel Gulliver. No doubt about the construction of the imaginary world and his preparations for his later nefarious endeavours. Also, Darth Vader was even more bullish in his early days. Brilliant story.
Debbie, do you understand that what he's referencing there?
What, you mean the guy who plays Darth Vader was playing the Minotaur?
No, he wasn't playing the Minotaur there. He does play one of the Nymon.
Okay. Yeah, he does. Yeah. No. Okay, I'm looking forward to that. Spring story.
Don't read. Yeah, get on with it.
Pulling off. Every time you're rude about or down on one, I'm like, I'm going to have to watch this. Brilliant story, inventive, challenging, pulling off the fantastical whilst maintaining the believability. There is so much more to point to in the story backing up my comments above, but for the sake of the podcast, I will simply say thank you, Doctor Who, and everyone involved. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
She got through it, everyone.
I got through it.
You know, I think you just
there was much rejoicing.
Hey.
Hello, Twenty Minute Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. The Mind Robber by Peter Lane. The TARDIS is menaced by a lot of foam. The master of the land in the story runs throughout the adventures of Captain Jack Harkaway. The first episode was hastily created by the production team because the previous story, The Dominators, was reduced by one. Zoe changes into a new outfit and gets cleaned up. A boy asks the Doctor, where was Moses when the lights went out? This was the title of a record released in 1901. It told the story of a preacher called Moses Johnson who went to an illegal gambling den hoping for donations to his church. They saw him coming and as he walked in, lights went out. Fraser Hines was ill and the Doctor, accidentally creating a different version of Jamie, was a clever way of using another actor. The TARDIS walls are clearly photographs of Randall's. Zoe and Jamie become fictional characters. What? They are fictional characters. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian.
Master. I commented last night, actually it was only about, 4 hours ago, to Ian's posting of the text of what he just read. Regarding the TARDIS walls, if I may be pedantic, yes, one of the walls is a photographic blow-up, as this was quite common during this era, and even discussed in the info text. I put up a screen grab of the info text saying this. They did still have the TARDIS doors and actual Randall section of the wall set up during the episode. Most of the close-up shots of Zoe reading off TARDIS console readings show the actual 3D Randalls behind her. Mm-hmm. The main wall we see most of the time, though, is the photo. So starting from the left of the set, as we look at it, you see the TARDIS doors that have physical Randalls on it, then the photographic wall, then the corridor going back to the rest of the ship, and then the 3D wall.
Thank
you. I think the host is here.
No, not you, Eileen. I'm the representative. Mr. Adams, don't worry.
She's not been very well. She's been sick, so I'm not going to have to find out. What is that?
So does the postman come around to you next, to Debbie, or has he been by you?
He'll probably be round to us next. We're one of the last codes.
Which hasn't been very well.
The house at the end of the lane.
We're right down the bottom of a long road, so we're one of the last. Were you last?
Why doesn't the postman just cut through your?
That's not the postman.
Back garden and.
It's not to the postman.
You've got to finish off Adam's road first.
Oh, okay.
That's Abdul from down the road who wants to play with Isabella, but Isabella's been ill overnight, so she's not feeling up to much at the moment.
It couldn't have been because the postman always rings twice.
Nice.
Oh dear. Right.
Does that make the postman a fictional character?
Oh, God.
Anyway.
Did Andy send feedback?
Pardon?
Did Andy send any feedback?
No. It's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
Wait, that's all the feedback?
Well, it's always all the feedback. Right, I wonder if Isabella, who earlier on wanted to help by reading out the questions, wants to do so. Isabella!
She does know how to say Lemuel, doesn't she?
Isabella!
Oh, well done, Isla, you can say it now.
Isabella! Yes, I called her! Isabella!
Pizza!
No, that's Alicia.
I know. But I had a good reason to say it the other
Did
day.
Did you want to do this or not?
What?
The quiz. You don't have to. Well, off you go then. Right then, first question goes... Hang on. Whoa, I was jumping ahead a bit there. Debbie, do you think it's going to be ahead after the questions?
Kirby,
who do you think is going to be ahead after the questions?
Adam.
Mary, who do you think is going to be ahead after the questions?
Debbie.
And I have to agree...
We've all picked different people.
I have to agree with Mary, Debbie... will be ahead of the questions. Remember, everybody has a joker. And the first question goes to Debbie. Hang on, let's get my random jingle thing up and running. Right. First question goes to Debbie, and it is this. What did the doctor stop vaporizing?
The fluid link.
I'll give you that one, even though it was fluid links. That's basically on Sontaran, who'd been liquidated. Fluid links. Do I get a point for comedy reasons? Thank you. Right. Next question goes to Kirby.
Master.
Why isn't the scanner showing anything?
Why isn't the scanner showing anything?
Or I'll rephrase the question. Why wasn't the scanner showing anything?
I think I know.
Because they were nowhere.
Yay!
Mary.
Yes.
What did Jamie say Zoe looked like in her Dalkissian clothes?
I know.
I'll do a joker, like a wee McCarty.
Whoa! It's actually look McClarty, but the phonetically correct.
McClarty, yeah, you're right.
It's McClarty.
Well done. And for an extra point, what is a McClarty?
It's a ragamuffin.
Oh, Mary's in.
Yay!
Right. Next question goes to Debbie.
Yep.
What is the emergency unit limited to?
I've only got a limited time.
Anybody?
A certain time.
Kirby.
Master.
What did the doctor exclaim when he realised Zoe had left the TARDIS?
I know.
He did?
Mm.
I don't remember. I lose.
Go on in, Debbie.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. Mary.
That was going to be my other quote.
Is it a line in this thing?
I might as well just say keep that as my quote for the rest of the second Doctor's era. Yeah. Mary.
Yes.
What was the first reading Zoe read off the meter?
All right. I just have some numbers here. I have 98743 going up to 91 point right. Something.
I think I know.
Go on then, Debbie.
Is it 990? It's the second reading he's referring to. He's going through the episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're always in order. All right, score update then. In last place with 3 points, it's Kirby. In second place with 4 points each, it's me and Debbie. And in the lead with 5 points is Mary.
Wow.
Next question goes to Debbie.
Yeah.
What did James... Oh, Lord. It's the co-founder of the show, everybody! Who's rather quietly and moodily skulking through to the other room.
She wanders in every once in a while?
No, she's staying here for a few nights because they got nowhere to stay. Sorry, who did I say the next question was for?
Me.
Debbie, right. What did Jamie dream of?
A unicorn.
Now, if you'd said...
Electric sheep?
If you said Zoe in a cat suit, like the rest of us... you would have got an extra point.
The fictional character, Dream of Electric Sheep.
Yes.
Kirby.
Master.
What did the doctor say just before he regained consciousness? No, he didn't say that.
I might know.
I will fight.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll give you that one.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, I had must fight. The fight was the word I was looking for. Right.
Okay.
Mary.
He kept going back and forth. My must fight.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that. Mary. Fight. Mary.
Yes.
What languages did Gulliver say he spoke? You get a point for each.
Oh, yes, I know that one.
Golly, did I write those down? I must not have written them down, so I don't know.
Go on then, Debbie.
Was it high and low Dutch, Latin, and that's as far as I got.
I can't give you 2 points because there really is. I'll give you a point, but you are right. So the languages I had written down were high and low Latin and English, of course, because he said at the beginning that he was speaking English. Yes.
Master?
Yes.
May I make a point? He does speak two other languages. He speaks
Lilliputian
and Brobdingnag, the other.
Did he say that in that? Did he say that though in that quote? Because he,
no, he did not say it. But that's what.
That's why the question said. Thank you for that. But that's what it says. What languages did Gulliver say?
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just being pedantic.
You're stretching things out a bit. Yeah. All right.
Of course,
Debbie.
That's my job. That's what you pay me for.
You get paid?
Really?
Debbie, what was the first question asked by the children?
Why did the chicken cross the road?
Oh, it didn't go off. That's better.
I heard it.
Like my joker.
Should have done, because we're running out of questions.
I'm forgetting about jokers.
Kirby. Well, Mary's played a joker. Adam and Eve were drowned. Who got saved?
Joker.
Yeah.
Pinch me.
I can't reach over that far. Mary, could you do the honours, please?
Ow.
Yeah, how was that? Yeah.
Mary.
Yeah.
What did the doctor wish? Sorry, what did the doctor wish he believed in? I beg your pardon. I've got two question marks there. What did the doctor wish he believed in?
He wished he believed in wishing wells.
Yay.
Debbie?
Yep.
What did Zoe have to do for the doctor and Jamie to let her out of the jar?
Did Zoe have to do?
Yeah,
I know.
I don't know.
Well, that doesn't happen very often. Kirby?
I promise to be a good girl.
Mm.
Right.
Missed that.
And Jamie says that, but I don't think that she agreed. Okay. But still, that's what you're trying to get at.
All right, Kirby.
Master?
What was the letter next to the one Jamie climbed up?
I don't know.
I think I might know.
Oh, you would.
Go on then, Debbie. Pardon?
Is it the letter L?
Wow. What brought you to that?
Because he said so.
No, but sure. In for a penny. Look before.
He climbed up there.
It could have been the
No, but he climbed up there. Said, I'm stood on the letter S. Oh, there's an L next to it. That's what you said.
Yeah.
Mary.
The L, you say.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Hang on, whose question was that originally? Sorry.
That was Kirby's, I think.
Was it?
Was it?
Yeah.
It wasn't mine.
Oh, there we go. It's Mary's question now, then. Yes, are we all agreed that Kirby got the initial?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, Mary, this is your question. Who played Jamie in episode 2 and 3?
Ooh, wish I had another joker. Hamish Wilson.
Only half right. I'll give you a point. Who wants the point? The other point.
Hamish.
Pardon?
Hamish.
No, who played Jamie in episodes 2 and 3?
Well, Fraser Hines.
The answer was Fraser Hines and Hamish Wilson. It actually says it in the titles. Please be correct.
Picky.
It's correct answer. Not picky. It's
correct. Right,
you know. It's so pedantic. It's almost to my level.
Current scores. Current scores. Shut up. Current scores are: in last place with 7 points is me. In third place with 8 points is Mary. In second place with 10 points is Kirby. And then lead with 11 points it's Debbie, who still hasn't played her Joker. Right. Debbie, this is your question.
Mm-hmm.
How did Jamie articulate his discovery of the soldier's ability to see?
I said that you've got a wee lighthouse or something. Yeah.
Another Joker missed. Running out of questions. Kirby.
Master.
What did the doctor say Gulliver had the knack of doing?
Oh, yeah, that's right. He kept turning up unexpectedly.
Is the correct answer.
I already played my Joker.
Mm. Mary.
Thing is, what I should have done was miss that one to give Adam more points so that when, at the end, Adam's more points would give me whatever. More points.
Never mind.
Yes.
Mary.
Yeah.
What year was the carcass from?
I know.
The year 2000.
We all remember that.
Right.
Yeah, well,
Debbie.
I'm glad I got it.
Debbie? Yes. What did the spider say to the fly? Oh, wrong question. Start again. Sorry. That was Debbie's. That was Kirby's fault for putting me off. You know what the next question is going to be now. Right, so we'll go back to...
You can answer that one if you'd like.
No, you're not going to answer that one. That's not your question. This is your question. What terrifying creatures from Gulliver's Travels were mentioned?
Oh, I know.
Oh, my God. I think I'm going to play my Joker, yep. And I think it's the Yahoos.
Eventually the Joker gets played. Kirby.
Master.
You know what the question is. What did the spider say to the fly?
Won't you walk into my parlour?
I suppose I'll give you that when it's come into my parlour, but yeah, that's fine.
No, he actually says well.
No, he says exactly.
All right, that's fine. Yes, I've given him the points. Right.
Better of.
Mary, and I've got to play my Joker on this one because I'm running out of questions, so I'm hoping this is the one that's going to get me my points. Mary.
Yes.
I hope so, too.
When did the doctor say no? Right. You know when the doctor and the master were together and the doctor said no to the, you know, to the request to take over. So the question is, when the doctor said no, what did the master say it was?
Say it was. He said, "I like submit. Resistance is useless."
Nope.
I don't understand the question.
Yeah, I don't understand it either.
Is it? It has been decided.
This is why I was having to get my joker. 1, 2, 3, 4. No, he said it was unfortunate. Thank you. He said
if
it was unfortunate.
If you ask questions, then we can't.
No, I did try and explain it to you. When the doctor said no, said nope. What did the master say it was? That's unfortunate. He said it's unfortunate.
Oh.
It's quite simple.
Okay.
That's what it was. Score update then, with hardly any questions left. In last place with 10 points, it's Mary. In third place with 11 points, it's me. In second place with 14 points, it's Kirby. In the lead with 17 points, it's Debbie. This question goes to Debbie.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon?
I've lost.
Be quiet. What accent did the carcass have?
My Lord.
A mixed one. German. Very mixed.
What makes you say that?
I have no idea.
Kirby.
Master.
What question? Josh, what question did Rapunzel ask the doctor?
Oh, I know.
I know, yeah.
Are you a prince?
Yes, I am. But what question did Rapunzel... right, Mary.
Yeah.
What did the doctor say humans would become like?
Oh, I know, yeah.
Like fiction.
Pardon? Mary, Debbie?
Sausages, like a string of sausages.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we have a last free-for-all question for everybody. Okay, I think this one, because it's the last free-for-all question, I'm quite prepared to give 4 points for the correct answer to this, okay?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What magazine did the master want to work for?
The Ensign magazine. Yeah.
Oh, you wanted to work for them? I didn't get that.
He holds it up.
This is the office of the Ensign magazine.
Yeah, sure, you wanted to write for.
That's who the master worked for, but he said, what magazine did the doctor want to work for?
No, but at the end, he was obviously on his way. When he got taken by, or taken out of reality.
See. I think I see what he
was on his way to the Ensign office. Because he has written these stories, and he wants to publish them in the Ensign.
Master?
Yes.
Master, you said, what magazine does the doctor want to work for?
Says master in front of me, so if I said that, I apologise. But there's no, I don't think the doctor would have wanted to work for any.
That's why she was confused.
I apologise, but Debbie understand what I was getting at.
I did, but, you know, no, give that back to Mary.
No, I'm not, no. Sorry. Right.
Excuse me.
I'm just listening out the other room because Alicia's in and there's usually an argument that ensues between her and her mother when she's in the house. Right, so the intermediate scores are in last place for 10 points, it's Mary. Third place with 12 points, it's me. In second place with 16 points, it's Kirby. And in the lead with 24 points, it's Debbie. However, I predicted Debbie would be ahead at this stage and I'm correct. Mary predicted Debbie would be ahead at this stage, and she is correct. Kirby predicted I would be ahead at this stage. He is incorrect. And Debbie predicted Kirby to be ahead at this stage. He is incorrect. Right. So the final scores are in last place with 16 points, Kirby. In second place with 20 points, Mary. And the joint winners this week, me and Debbie, with 24 points each. And because, of course, I set the questions, I can't win it on when it's a draw. So Debbie is the winner.
Yay.
On the subject of news, I have heard that, and I don't know if it's true, that John Barrowman is in talks with the BBC to bring Torchwood back.
Yes,
I'd
heard that.
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
So I don't know who would be producing us, but it's probably John Barrowman if he's the one actually trying to bring it back. So that'd be interesting to see what happens. Hopefully they'll bring it back in.
Let's just hope it's not that horrible thing that was.
Like I say, hopefully it'll be the BBC version rather than.
Oh,
yeah.
That was horrible.
Horrible.
Based in Cardiff.
Remember when we were trying not to say bad things about Miracle Day?
Who said that? who said we weren't allowed to say bad things about it?
Yeah,
no, right. when we were reviewing it, as we were watching it week by week.
Yeah.
We were trying to like it, and we were stretching for things to like about it because we didn't really want to say that it was bad.
Well,
nowadays,
I'm going to say about it, remembering it.
It's bad.
The things I talked positively about at the time were the things I liked about it. We just didn't really talk about what we didn't like about it. But there were some massive holes in the idea of the way these things were immortal. Being incinerated was the things that killed people, but there's still something left of an incinerator, even if it's air or dust or gas, you know. So it's but yeah, I'm not going to go down that road again. But it wasn't totally unlikable because I was in the story, but it wasn't the best. No.
Well, let's put it this way: I have no desire to have the DVDs.
No, I wouldn't have the DVDs, no. Not unless I had to watch it for review purposes.
And that's extremely rare for me to not want something that is Doctor Who related.
The reason why it didn't work for me is because it was a continuing story, went on and on too long. I like Torchwood as like a one or two episode package.
Of course, there were pictures on Facebook of John Barrowman in the recording, Big Finish recording studios with Camille Cadura. And we don't, you know, we're all holding our breath trying to figure out what story could they possibly be in together.
So there's not a lot of news, to be fair. From last week, it looks like he's at the same page. Tom Baker joins Star Wars Rebels. I think we talked about that last week, didn't we?
Yes.
The actor William Lucas has died at the age of 91. He played Range in the 1994 story Frontius. So, again...
I haven't seen Frontius.
Oh, well, you'll be seeing it.
I always thought it was Frontius.
No, yeah, it's because you're American. Frontius. It's Frontius. What is it, Debbie? It's Frontius. What is it?
Frontius.
Yeah. Just because word ends in I-O-S, it doesn't mean it means os. It's not a Greek word.
And that's probably how... The way you pronounce it is probably the way it's pronounced in the story. I just haven't seen the story.
Frontius.
I will change once I see the story.
Yeah, it's Frontius. Frontius. Frontius.
Well, we'll get around to it eventually.
Mm. Yeah, well, definitely. Lethbridge-Stewart, The Playing Dead. This month sees the release of the Lethbridge-Stewart novel Grandfather Infestation by John Peel. So if you like books, well, the picture on the cover's a bit gruesome. This week sees also Titan release a new comic featuring the 11th Doctor in a new story arc. So if you like the comics and stuff like that, you have to look out for that. But yeah, other than that, there's really not much going on in the Doctor Who news world, which rather segues me over to Debbie talking about the Audible thing while I get up Who Won.
What do you mean? audible.co.uk/20MB, where you can go have a free trial book for 30 days from a huge plethora of books. And some of them are utterly brilliant, and we do have quite a few of them now. And then you pay about £7 a month for unlimited access to as many Audible books as you like. And there's no restriction on that. You can cancel that whenever you like. But we are doing the Harry Potters at the moment.
Obviously, the reason why I promoted that to the first thing we're talking about, because audiobooks were sort of more or less talked about or brought into the story we've just been watching.
Yes.
Definitely.
No.
Yes. I'm looking on the Facebook page for any, this is the 20MB Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join, for any Doctor Who feedbacky type things, but cannot see anything. By the way, the little video I posted from Newport Carnival, if you watch it for long enough, you'll see the Dalek woman and the TARDIS woman that I took a picture of.
Oh, okay.
Going past. Yeah, that's why.
So will they be listening?
No. I did tell them it's for a podcast, but they weren't particularly interested. But they did say, because I took their picture and they said, oh, but K9's over there. And in the video, you'll see them wheeling along their wooden K9.
I haven't watched the video yet. I will watch it this evening.
I wouldn't post
the
video.
I was too busy.
Sorry, if you've got the chocolate stuffing theme tune going on in the background, because I want to sit with me while she does something.
whoone.co.uk.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
Gallifrey Enemy Lines by David Llewellyn is a CD audio booky type thing. It's 180 minutes long and it has just been released. You can buy that for £20. Coming soon, we've got the 2017 annual, which I won't get because, like I say, it probably won't ever be read. Companion Chronicles Second Doctor Box Set.
I buy things I won't read.
Yeah, and when you want to buy them, you buy them from whoone.co.uk. And Countermeasures, Who Killed Tony Kinsella. What genre is that in then? Is that a Doctor?
Oh, it is. That's Big Finish.
It's got Doctor Who on the cover.
Oh, sure, because it's a Doctor Who spinoff from Remembrance of the Daleks.
Of course it is, yes.
Countermeasures group, yeah.
Yeah.
They have a spinoff series of their own, and it's excellent.
Oh, good. And also patron of the show, Andrew Cartmel, Evening's Empire. It's a paper.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to buy that from him at Con K, so I'll have to get it next spring at Con GT, where he will be a guest.
I'm waiting for payday, and he and I are in email talks about what I'm going to have from him.
Oh, I see. got a shop going, is he? Lavazzi.co.uk have a rather impressive range of
my favorite garments, sponsors.
Whether you like Sherlock, Star Trek, or Doctor Who. Of course, their Doctor Who range is outstandingly good. And I don't think any Doctor Who fan that is a fan of the whole sort of umbrellaed world of Doctor Who cannot want to have the fourth Doctor's scarf. And
they have wonderful scarves.
You get the best ones, the most accurate ones, and the most loved by the BBC, of course, from Lavazzi.co.uk. And that's it, yes. So anybody else got anything else to report before we wind up the show?
When will we be discussing the invasion?
Invasion, I should think. Well, it's quite a long story, so I would suggest probably in a couple of weeks' time. Well, not exactly a couple of weeks, nearly a couple of weeks' time.
Sunday, I hope.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, it's going to be Sunday, on Sunday. Sunday, the 7th of August. Mind you, that's Cow's Week. Oh, it's the end of Cow's Week. It's the beginning of Cow's Week, isn't it?
Will that work for you? You're the one who...
It
worked
for me.
Well, it might work for me. I'll finish work at 6 on that day, so I've got less time.
Yeah.
Okay, let me look at the calendar here.
Yeah, I think we better go for that one.
So the 7th, did you say?
7th of August.
Okay, that looks like it'll work for me.
All right, we'll go for that one. Yeah, that's it. Because the 14th, I've got two weddings before the 14th of August, so I probably need to probably do some editing. But we might do one on the 14th anyway. Let's see how we get on.
Is the whole thing of reconstruction?
No, we've got a couple of episodes that are reconstructed. It's mainly not reconstructed.
Okay.
They're not so much reconstructed as now animations.
Yeah, the invasion's got animated ones. We only have one more reconstruction left.
Yeah, and that's that's the Space Pirates. But as far as the invasion goes, I think pretty sure we've already done this.
I think so.
With the the animated episodes. So that was a while back. So that's about it then, isn't it? Ready for this week?
Yeah.
That was short.
But sweet.
That's because we didn't have Andy.
Because I was able to.
Yeah, really, really.
Because I was able to keep you in check, Kirby. So sometimes at this time.
Are we playing chess?
No, sometimes at this time in the morning, saying "Shut up, Kirby" actually works. So, thank you for listening to the show. Until next time, 7th of August, where we'll be looking at the invasion. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye.
This is wonderfully early.
Damn, why can't you remind me to press the record button? God's sake, Kirby. Can you... you have to get the audio sorted out and send it to me. of my audio, obviously, because...
Don't wind him up this early in the morning.
It's me. Right, did we not record?
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an avvservices.co.uk production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is sponsored by whoone.co.uk, lavazi.co.uk and audible.com. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.